usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line from Sudbury, Canada, Don Scott, and we're going to have a fascinating talk going into a treatise that he's written going into the relationship between the AIDS infection and JFK, and you may find that's a little tenuous. And, of course, most people would find that so much of what Don Scott writes about would be difficult to believe, and I suppose that 15 years ago I would have been one of those. When I was involved with the battle to try to address the AIDS epidemic as an infectious disease and try to stop its spread, and this starting really from 1986 until 1996, and I dedicated myself all my waking hours when I wasn't practicing medicine to try to get the information out that we had a major epidemic and millions of people were going to die unnecessarily because we were not doing what was logical to stop the epidemic. I mean, doctors know how to stop epidemics. You find out who has the disease and try to keep them from giving it to others, but we weren't allowed to do that with the AIDS epidemic. Oh, we can stop the SARS epidemic. We can stop all sorts of epidemics. We can stop sexually transmitted diseases like syphilis and gonorrhea that are not primarily anywhere near as deadly as AIDS, but we were never allowed to do that with AIDS, and 500,000 Americans have died, another million are infected. Throughout the world, probably close to 30 million are dead, another 50 million are infected, and the disease will continue spreading and spreading, and countless millions more will die totally unnecessarily. It is difficult to believe that there are evil people in the world, and that was the hardest thing that I had as I was addressing the epidemic, and I would often go around the country, or even around the world. I talked in Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, and people would always ask, but where did the virus come from, and why, you know? And I would always say, well, you're asking the wrong question. You shouldn't ask where the virus came from. You ought to be asking, you know, why we are trying to stop the spread of this disease using standard and effective public health approaches. Well, I look back on that, and I realize, of course, both questions should be asked. Where did the AIDS virus come from? And only after I'd, gone into radio full-time and why I received something by fax. In fact, Joyce Riley, who does talk radio about the same time, got the same thing. Somebody in government wanted us to have a complete copy of a testimony by Dr. David MacArthur, who was employed by the Army in chemical and biological warfare development, and his testimony in 1969 before the House Appropriations Committee on Military Affairs, saying we can create, probably within 10 years, an entirely new disease. We can create a new type of organism for which there will be no immune response, and of course it'll cost about $10 million. Many people think we shouldn't do that because it's be another form of mass killing. But we want the money, and we want to develop it. And the money was appropriated, and 10 years later, why, the first cases of AIDS were reported in San Francisco and Los Angeles, and 75% of the homosexuals who took an experimental hepatitis B vaccine in San Francisco, 75% of them came down with AIDS, and that's where the epidemic started, with that experimental vaccine given to homosexuals, but nobody ever mentions that. Well, Don, why don't you pick up the story there?
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. What we have been looking at our foundation, the Common Cause Medical Research Foundation, what we've been looking at over the last few months as we've put together the current issue of our journal, the Journal of Degenerative Diseases, and the next three issues of the journal, a total of four issues of together, what we have found and what we've been putting together in these issues of the journal are the links that we have detected between the people who were working in the very early days of the AIDS epidemic, and even earlier than that, that were working on antecedent disease pathogens, which now are evident in the disease entity that's referred to as AIDS. The links between AIDS and initially the murder of John F. Kennedy. Now, most people say, hey, wait a minute. There was no AIDS officially until 1981, when Dr. Gottlieb of Los Angeles wrote an article about patients he had been treating who had this peculiar disease syndrome of pneumonia and Kaposi's sarcoma and a number of other characteristics. Dr. Gottlieb wrote this article in 1981, and Mr. Kennedy was murdered way back 18 years before.
Uh-huh, but I bet there's a tie-in to Mr. Ferry, is there? David Ferry?
Yes, he's one of the people that were very clearly involved, because David Ferry, whom some people may remember, was a rather eccentric gentleman who was a friend of Lee Harvey Oswald. And after Lee Harvey Oswald was murdered by Jack Ruby right in the basement of the Dallas police, Jim Garrison, the attorney general for, or district attorney, pardon me, for the city of New Orleans.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Don Scott. And Don has done some amazing work on so many subjects. And this evening we were going to be talking about the relationship between the assassination of John Kennedy and the AIDS epidemic. And, of course, John had pointed out, of course, the AIDS epidemic started, at least as far as we know, first cases were reported in 1981, although it had been around for several years before that. And John Kennedy was assassinated in 1963. But so what's the relationship between them? Well, one of the people, if you've ever seen Oliver Stone's movie on JFK, or you've read any of the things written about the Jim Garrison examination of what really happened there in New Orleans, you find that there was a man named David Ferry, and he, of course, had close ties to Clay Shaw. He was a close friend of Lee Harvey Oswald, and David Ferry was a key figure, except, of course, he died mysteriously before he could ever be called to testify. But pick up the story there, Don.
Yes. There was not only David Ferry, a friend of Lee Harvey Oswald, involved, but a great number of other people that figured in the assassination investigation that was carried on by Jim Garrison. It turns out that these people also were involved with the University of Tulane, or Tulane University, and Dr. Alton Ochsner, who was the director of the medical school at Tulane, and Dr. Jose Rivera, who was tied in with Tulane University and was also tied in with the research that was going on in New Orleans by David Ferry, because when Jim Garrison began investigating the murder of President Kennedy, he developed an awful lot of evidence that tied David Ferry to the murder of the president. So he arrested Ferry, and Ferry managed to get bail and get out on bail, and was out on bail just a few days when he was murdered. He died. He died under very strange circumstances, and the results of the autopsy were inconclusive, but Jim Garrison was pretty sure, and the evidence, I think, supports him, that David Ferry was actually murdered. But the peculiar thing was that in his apartment were banks of cages, and in those cages were mice. And on each cage was a label stating that that mouse had been born at a certain date and had been kept for a certain period of time, and that at a certain point along the line had been injected with a monkey virus. Now, what is this strange person, David Ferry, friend of Lee Harvey Oswald, doing with a bunch of cages in his apartment, and in those cages, mice that were affected with a monkey virus? Well, the monkey virus figures very, very importantly in the work that was being done to develop the AIDS cofactors that our foundation has discovered in the medical literature of the time and subsequently. We have been looking at all the literature to determine what are the scientific microorganisms that are detectable in victims of AIDS, and where did these pathogens come from.
And of course, I think it's so important that certainly people with AIDS have HIV, but do they have other infections as well? And is HIV simply only part of the complex? And nobody wants to talk about the mycoplasma involvement, which almost all AIDS cases, at least 90% of them, have. And go ahead, Don. I think it's so important that people understand that this is a co-infection. Most doctors really don't know that because somebody has been suppressing the information.
Well, you've touched on a very important aspect of this whole affair. This so-called HIV, this so-called human immunodeficiency virus as the cause of AIDS. Dr. Stan, HIV is not the cause of AIDS. Now, that's a very startling statement to 99% of your listeners. But anybody who goes through the evidence and gathers it as we have will realize this is true. And it helps explain a letter we got 2 weeks ago today. 2 weeks ago today, I received a letter from London, England, from a gentleman I won't give his name. And he said to me in the letter, he said, "Dear Professor Scott, I have all of the principal symptoms of AIDS." He said, "I have Kaposi's sarcoma, and I have the pneumonia that is characteristically a feature of AIDS, and most of the other diseases that go with AIDS." And he says, "My doctor and the specialist to whom he sent me over the past year all agree that I have AIDS. But," he says, "they have tested my blood several times with the most sophisticated equipment available, and there's no human immunodeficiency virus anywhere in the blood. And they don't know why I have AIDS, but no HIV. And I wrote to him and told him that our evidence demonstrated that HIV is a cofactor in most cases of AIDS these days, but it is not the cause of the AIDS. Something else is causing the AIDS, and the human immunodeficiency virus is an opportunistic invader that has been artificially introduced into the individual. And but it has been blamed as the cause, and it's blamed as the cause so people will head down the false trail.
And, of course, the other thing is Kaposi's sarcoma is a viral disease.
Yes.
And, of course, you know, when your immune system goes down the tubes and you can no longer fight it off, then it will begin to produce this, these purple skin lesions and eventually lead to the demise of the individual. The trouble is that this Kaposi's sarcoma virus, which was really very, very rare, Kaposi's sarcoma was hardly ever seen until recent years, until the AIDS epidemic. And now it is all throughout the blood supply, and of course, people take with, of course, they don't test for that when they test your blood, and of course, we're getting this into the whole population, and all you need to do then is damage the immune system, and of course, people come down with Kaposi's sarcoma, all of these new diseases, and now that are beginning to plague people, and people have no idea why it's happening.
Yes, and the HIV, so-called, which is actually an adaptation of what's called the Vizsna virus of sheep. Now, the Vizsna virus of sheep has three different forms in sheep. One is called the Vizsna, and one is called the Maedi, M-A-E-D-I, and the other is called Rida. And doctors collectively call these, when they turn up in a patient, they collectively call them scrapy, evidences of the disease scrapy. And they're called scrapy, in turn, because the sheep, where the disease originally was recognized, are itchy. And because they're so itchy, they go to posts and trees, and they rub up against those posts or trees to relieve the itch, and they scrape the wool off their hides. So collectively they're called scrapy, but there are three different manifestations of the same disease organism, and that organism is the same organism with very, very, very minor genomic differences between themselves and the human immunodeficiency virus, which was supposedly discovered by Dr. Robert Gallo, and he had originally called it the human T cell leukemia virus number 3. And it turns out, as some people will know, that this HTLV3, which they now call HIV, had originally been discovered in the blood of a patient in a Lisbon hospital by a French scientist called Luc Montagnier, who called it lymphadenopathy-associated virus, or LAV. Now, that's an awful lot of hocus-pocus and a whole lot of initials and a whole lot of data, and people will wonder what in the heck I am talking about. But essentially, it is this. There is a disease virus adapted from sheep called HIV, and that disease virus is not what causes the illness known as AIDS.
But it is associated with it. In other words, it's there, and it plays a... but there are other... mycoplasm is a major issue, and what people have to understand is not one AIDS epidemic. There are about eight of them. There's HIV-1, there's HIV-2. Under HIV-1, you have types M and O, and under type M, you have A, B, C, D. Where do they all come from? All come from, all at once, all over the world. Where did it come from? Nobody wants to ask that question. I'll tell you, it didn't come from chimpanzees.
Well, I hear that music, so I...
No, you go ahead and pick it up. We were just mentioning that they're trying to convince you this came from chimpanzees. Up until recently, you did not find the HIV virus in any chimpanzee in the wild. And now, they claim they found it in some little subgroup of chimpanzees, at least in their droppings. But before that, it was only found in chimpanzees in laboratories, and of course, very, very specifically in laboratory animals. And some of those laboratory animals were actually released back into the wild. And I believe that that's how it got there. In fact, all the indications is that not one, but a number of different HIV viruses. I mean, here in the United States, it's type B, and Africa, it's, as I remember, A and C, and over in Thailand, it's E. All of these subdivisions of this virus all appeared spontaneously all throughout the world, all at one time. And nobody ever wants to talk about that. And, of course, one explanation is they were made in laboratories and disseminated throughout the world in vaccines. What a wonderful way to create a new epidemic that would kill millions of people, if you believe there are too many people in the world, that is. Go ahead, Don.
Yes, well, this is where we get back to David Ferry and the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Because, first of all, let's establish, believe you me, we've got evidence here, miles and miles of scientific documents from all the scientific journals that we have had access to, evidence which demonstrates clearly, once and for all, to us and to anybody who wants to see the evidence. The evidence is that the human immunodeficiency virus does not cause AIDS. The human immune deficiency virus is a sheep virus adapted by scientists and mixed in with a cofactor, and that cofactor is the mycoplasma you've been speaking of, and the mycoplasma is what was associated and is associated with not only David Ferry, friend of Lee Harvey Oswald, but also Dr. Alton Ochsner of Tulane University. And now you mentioned the chimpanzees and the talk that they came from chimpanzees, and there's also talk that it came from green monkeys and so on. It came from neither, except indirectly, and again we're building up to why David Ferry, friend of Lee Harvey Oswald, had all these cages of mice in his apartment. It came from this mycoplasma. So we've got to take a look at the mycoplasma. What is it? Where did it come from? And how does it figure in AIDS? And how does it figure in the murder of President John F. Kennedy? Well, the mycoplasma is a particle of the genome of a bacteria. Now here we go again with more of this mumbo-jumbo, hocus-pocus scientific talk that will throw people off to a degree, but let me just make it clear what it is I'm referring to. The mycoplasma is, as I say, a particle of the genome of the bacteria, of a bacteria. Now, a bacterium, singular, is a little one-celled animal. One little cell is a living organism.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with you, Don, here. Just a moment. All right. Well, our guest is Don Scott, and we're talking about the origin of AIDS, and certainly HIV is simply part and parcel of this whole complex. There's another organism. It's a mycoplasma that's identified. In fact, the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology has a patent on this specific type of genetically engineered mycoplasma. In fact, you'll find on the shell of HIV virus one of the genes that comes off the mycoplasm, or the same gene. So it's a mycoplasm fermentans, and of course apparently David Ferry was working with Dr. Ochsner there at the University of Tulane. And in fact, there's a book we have in our library. It's called Mary Ferry and the monkey virus. Mary being a well-known scientist who worked at Tulane, who died very mysteriously after having her arm and leg literally burned off. And suddenly it would appear that somebody wanted to silence her. And then Ferry, David Ferry, and the monkey virus, which of course led to AIDS. Fascinating book, but the sort of thing you're not going to hear talked about most places. So go ahead and pick up the story there, Don.
All right, now, the mycoplasma, a particle of the genome of a bacterium. The bacterium is brucellosis, or brucella. The brucella bacteria are bacteria that cause the disease known as brucellosis. Now, most people haven't heard of brucellosis because it used to be carried in unpasteurized milk.
It was undulant fever is what we used to call it.
Undulant fever, Malta fever, Cypress fever,
Glanders,
undulant fever, all these different names, or Bang's disease was the most common one. But this particular bacterium, this little one-celled animal, has a genome, and part of that genome, when the bacterium is dead, part of the genome, which is the blueprint for the little one-celled animal, the bacterium. And incidentally, by way of comparison, the average human being has about 50 trillion of these cells versus the bacterium, which has just one cell. A pretty lopsided fight. But anyway, the genome of the bacterium, a particle of it, when the bacterium is killed by pasteurization or whatever else, a particle of its genome that has access to the human body either through a mosquito bite or through the atmosphere. They're in a room where somebody with the disease is breathing out, and they're in the same room and they're breathing in the air of that infected person. They can pick up that particle of the disease bacterium, and it becomes part of them. And when it gets that foothold, it can, over a significantly long period of time, develop such a foothold that various disease entities in their body begin to present as, for example, chronic brucellosis. Now, chronic brucellosis is really the antecedent to what we now call chronic fatigue syndrome, because chronic fatigue syndrome, which came out in 1981 officially, the same year that AIDS came out officially, both have their origin in the particle of bacterial genome known as the Mycoplasma fermentans.
And of course, I think what's so difficult for people to believe is that anybody would be evil enough to create new diseases to disable people. But if you doubt that this is possible, let me suggest you get a book written by that great American patriot, Zbigniew Brzezinski, the man who created the Trilateral Commission for David Rockefeller, the book Between Two Ages, published in 1969 and 1970. And there in a footnote, he talks about how in the future, we're not only going to be able to create storms and droughts, why we're going to be able to create chronic diseases to disable people. And then you won't have to fight them. You just go in and take them over. And this is going to be some years in the future, but he's writing in 69 or 70, and Zbigniew Brzezinski doesn't see anything wrong with creating these new diseases to attack the enemy with. And, of course, the question is, who is the enemy? And, of course, some people would think that maybe the American people are the enemy, at least those people who would want to be free. So go ahead, Don.
Yes, and in 1969, you've already alluded to Donald MacArthur.
Donald MacArthur,
yes.
Okay.
Dr. Donald MacArthur had told the representative congressmen who were on the Biological Warfare Committee. Now, that's another thing you need to note as you go through the details that we're talking about here.
Don, I think we're going to just let you hold that thought for just a moment, because we're going to have to go to a break, and I don't want to interrupt that thought. I think it's so important to know that the testimony is there and available. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Donald Scott, and we're talking about the testimony of Dr. Donald MacArthur before the House Appropriations Committee in 1969 for the year of 1970, appropriating the money that the military will use to create a new disease, an entirely new disease that's never existed before, that will destroy the immune system. So pick up the story there, Don.
Yes, well, Dr. MacArthur, in 1969, as you mentioned, was talking with a group, was presenting evidence to a group of members of the House of Representatives. Now, this is something your American listeners should listen to very, very carefully. They, or 49 or 50% of them, go every 2 years to elect congressmen. And these congressmen make promises, we will do this for you, and we will do that for you, and we will advance your life in this way and that way and the other way, and we will protect your health and all the rest of it. Actually, this group of House of Representatives members that back in 1969, and they have their successors today who are in power in Congress, they got elected on the grounds of advancing the welfare of their electorate, but they meet in secret and they discuss ways of killing off even their own supporters. Because these 12 congressmen that met on June the 9th, 1969, with Dr. Donald MacArthur, who was head of the Pentagon's biological warfare research, he said to them, as you've mentioned, eminent biologists have told me that within 5 to 10 years it would be possible to develop a new microorganism, one which does not naturally exist and which is refractory to the human immune system. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the mycoplasma fermentans that we're talking about. And that is what, on the one hand, causes AIDS when it's coupled with a cofactor. That cofactor can either be the HIV, which comes from sheep, or it can be the hepatitis disease agent that has long plagued, for example, homosexuals. And Dr. MacArthur said, now, we are working on two biological weapons based upon this disease agent. One is
hold that thought right there, please, and we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Don Scott is talking about a testimony that was given by Dr. Donald MacArthur back in 1969 to the House Appropriations Committee, asking for money so they could create two new diseases. Two new terrible diseases going to be produced by our government. Now, we have the testimony. It was given to me. It was sent to me, as it was to Joyce Riley, about the same time, probably by the same people working in government who wanted to get the information out, but they feared for their lives and they feared for their jobs. And so it was sent totally anonymously, came in on the fax machine with no return address, no way to track who had actually sent it. But somebody did send it out. We have it. We've checked it out. It's accurate. And it is available through Radio Liberty. It's rather long, but it's Dr. MacArthur's testimony. But go ahead, Don. You pick up the story there.
Yes. Well, Dr. MacArthur said we're working on two disease agents, one which is lethal, and it will be lethal because it will be refractory to the human immune system, that is AIDS, and the other which is disabling. We won't kill the victim, we will disable the victim. Now, why did they want two disease agents, one which would kill and one which would disable? Well, the fact of the matter is that you can, in this evil world, and when I say evil world, I put at the top of the list the United States of America, you can kill thousands of black people every day, and the world not really give much of a hoot. Now, let me illustrate that by pointing out that today and yesterday and the day before and the day before that and tomorrow and the day after tomorrow and so on, 8,000 people a day have been dying of AIDS. Now that is two World Trade Center towers a day knocked down every day, year after year after year, because the people being killed, 8,000 of them every day, are being killed by the lethal form of this disease agent known as AIDS.
But of course they are predominantly black, and because they're predominantly black, while most people aren't concerned, about 55 to 60% of all the new AIDS cases in the United States today are in the black population. Because we white folks have just degenerative, a couple of genes that have actually mutated and are not, and for some reason or other that the blacks' genes did not mutate, and as a result where they're much more susceptible to this disease. So this is a race-specific disease. Predominantly whites can get it, but it's much harder to get it. And that's why in Africa today, in Botswana, 46% of the women tested who are pregnant coming in for prenatal testing, 46% of the women are HIV infected and they're all going to die. That is either the greatest public health tragedy of all time or the most successful genocidal policy. And of course, if it was a public health failure, you'd think that they'd want to change the approach to the epidemic. But the people in Botswana, the doctors there wanted to do routine testing of everybody to try to stop the epidemic, and everybody in the World Health Organization and the World Public Health Organization said, oh no, you shouldn't be doing that. Don't do routine testing. Don't try to find out who has the disease. You know, just continue doing what we're doing, passing out condoms, telling people, you know, to protect themselves. 46% of the pregnant women in Botswana are infected. And what's the approach? Well, we're going to continue doing exactly what we're doing. How could you be so stupid? Or maybe it's not stupid at all. Maybe they know exactly what they're doing. Go ahead, Don.
Well, they know what they're doing, all right. They're killing off 8,000 people a day, predominantly black people, because the people of the United States and Canada and Britain know that you can, in this world, which is so morally ambivalent, you can kill 8,000 black people a day and not cause any darn stir at all. And that is just exactly what they're doing. And David Ferry, way back in the 1960s, and Dr. Alton Ochsner and others were all involved in putting together the pieces that were required to present these cofactors. One is a disease agent which puts down the immune system that our bodies have developed over the years to protect us from disease. But Dr. MacArthur also told those members of the House of Representatives, and as I say, they have their successors in the House of Representatives to this day. The people that you are electing, there are some of them who are privy to the secrets. There are others who suspect the secrets but say nothing because they will get lampooned by the popular media, starting with the New York Times and so on. However, Dr. MacArthur told the members of the House of Representatives that one of the disease agents they were developing would be lethal. They would kill off thousands of people. And that's just what they wanted to do.
And that his term was, some people think we shouldn't produce this organism because it would be another means of mass killing. But we want to do it. We want the $10 million.
They wanted mass killing because according to the sponsors of this whole program, and we know who they are, and I'll be mentioning it as we go along, but Dr. MacArthur also mentioned to the congressman that besides the lethal form of this disease agent, was a disabling form of this agent. And that disabling form presents as chronic fatigue syndrome. And why has that particular variant? Because in the United States of America, you can kill off, or you can kill off worldwide, through the agency primarily of the United States, 8,000 blacks, but you could not kill off 8,000 white people a day. Plain and simply, there'd be such a political revolution. If you were killing 8,000 white people a day, there would be such a political revolution that they would have to get to the source of what's going on, and the media would have to face up to the reality of it. So they have, instead of that, they have a disabling disease. And this disabling disease primarily affects women. And in the United States of America today, you can disable probably close to 8,000 people a day, mostly women, with chronic fatigue syndrome, but not kill them.
And, of course, there's an overlap between chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. So would you agree with that, Don?
Oh, yes. They are aspects of the same disease agent, because we know that actually our foundation has determined the difference between chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. They're both aspects of the same disease.
Right.
But the fibromyalgia is a situation in the human body where the disease agent, the mycoplasma, converts into a form which it can convert into quite naturally if it gets sufficient level of concentration and under certain circumstances of atmospheric pressure and temperature. The mycoplasma, which is ordinarily in solution in the blood being carried through the body, it reaches a point in certain people of concentration where it converts back to a crystalline form. Like little particles of sand, they accumulate in places in the body where the vascular system branches, and blood, which is at one level of pressure, diminishes in pressure, and the mycoplasma can crystallize in little pockets in 22 different places in the body. And under ordinary circumstances, they don't cause that much harm. However, if the individual is pressured at one of those points, they feel excruciating pain. Now, an analogy would be a situation where you have sand in your shoe, and you don't even know it until you stand up to go for a walk. And if there are 20 or 30 particles of sand, it is distressful. So you have to say, wait a minute, I got sand in my shoe, let me take it out. So you take the shoe off, you tap the sand out, you put it back on, and it doesn't feel distressful anymore. The mycoplasma, one of the characteristics of mycoplasma is this, and we have this in a scientific document from the United States Department of Defense, Dr. George Merck, who was director of biological warfare research, again said to a committee of senators this time, not congressmen, he said that the scientists working for biological warfare, had learned how, for the first time, to cause the toxoid that presents as these diseases, how to present it in crystalline form. Now, this is where they get women, principally, as the victims of the disabling disease form. Why do they get women? Well, read the evidence. We've got it, you've got it, other people have it, but nobody's put it together until the Common Cause Medical Research Foundation put the pieces together, and they're so simple and so easy that the only reason they're not told to the world is because the medical profession, led by the public health agencies, the National Institutes for Health, and the Centers for Disease Control, and led by certain congressmen and certain senators, don't want you to know the truth. The truth is that this disease agent, in this government document that we have, we've got a copy of it, and again we can present it to people who want to look at it, they learned how they could cause this disease agent to present in crystalline form. Now, a person with chronic fatigue has a disease agent in their body, and we know how that works. and we know why it works principally in women. And here's why it works principally in women. The various of the doctors that we have as authority have pointed out that the mycoplasma will work to cause chronic fatigue syndrome when certain levels of the disease agent are present in the blood. Now, if you take a 125-pound woman and stand her beside a 200-pound man, think how much more blood there is in that man than there is in that woman. Now, which is going to get a concentration of the disease agent faster, the 125-pound woman or the 200-pound man? It's obvious. It's the same as if you had a 4-ounce glass of water and an 8-ounce glass of water. Which one would get a concentration of alcohol faster, the 4-ounce glass or the 8-ounce glass? Well, naturally, the 4-ounce glass would become concentrated faster. But not only that, women not only have less blood than men, not only because of their lower weight, but genetically, for some reason, women's bodies do not produce the same ratio of blood to mass that men's blood does. And in addition to that, the amount of hemoglobin, which is the important factor in the blood, in women is 20% less per volume than is the amount of hemoglobin in men. And therefore, women get that level of concentration significantly faster than men, and therefore there will be 6 women present with chronic fatigue syndrome for only one man. Well, now, men basically are so... I find it hard to find a word, but they think that it's because women are naturally weaker than men. What baloney. This is not the factor at all. The fact is that women have less blood and less hemoglobin than men, and therefore when they are affected with the mycoplasma reaches that critical stage faster than they do with men. So you can disable 8,000 women a day. Now, why does mycoplasma disable women, principally there, and kill blacks in Africa? Because the black in Africa, when he was given his dose of mycoplasma to put down his immune system, there was also something added in with it. And what was added in with it? The virus from sheep, known as scrapie or Vizsla. Those two things were put together by the scientists who were working for the people of the United States of America, working under the cover of secrecy and yet using taxpayers' money and working to develop 2 diseases.
Now, of course, a lot of this, of course, was funded by the CIA in the 1950s, and then, of course...
They get their money from the taxpayer.
Right, and then there was a special virus cancer project in the 50s and 60s, and all of this, of course, Don has covered in. It is material, but for our listeners, because we're going to lose some of our missed listeners at the end of the hour, what is the tie-in between the murder of John Kennedy and the David Perry, and, of course, the creation of this AIDS epidemic that is devastating and killing so many people today, both from chronic illness and from 8,000 people a day dying. Is there any other tie-in other than
the
fact that Perry was certainly working with the Ochsner Clinic there, which was experimenting to carry out the CIA program?
Oh, yes, very much there's a tie-in. And not only David Perry, as you point out, he was one of the frontline soldiers. He was one of the ordinary men and women who get recruited into that evil organization, the CIA, which John F. Kennedy said before his death he was going to break it into 1,000 pieces and throw the pieces to the wind, but they killed him before he could do that. And they still have their power, they still have their sway. They are still the dominant evil force in the world today, and not only did they work with the military and work with selected doctors in the National Institutes for Health and the Centers for Disease Control to develop the disease agent which causes AIDS and chronic fatigue. They worked along with the CIA and others to take John F. Kennedy out of the political picture before he could take them out. That is one of the factors. And we have, for example, Dr. Jose Rivera. My goodness, we know an awful lot about Dr. Jose Rivera. The average person in the United States does not even know his name, even though he is one of the people who is responsible for several thousand women every day coming down with chronic fatigue syndrome and several thousand innocent black people in Africa being killed by these evil people working for the United States government and being paid by taxpayers' money.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, Don, let's go ahead, and as soon as we get back, I want you to get out your telephone number, but certainly the average American has no idea what's going on. The average taxpayer has little idea what's going on, and so many people working within the CIA don't really understand what's going on, that there is an element within all of our intelligence agencies that are just plain evil. And when you understand that, and this is not new, certainly we know that Aleister Crowley, who was a Satanist, was part of a British intelligence. He worked for a British intelligence. And we know, of course, that there is an occult element within our own intelligence agencies. It's been there since it was first established, you know, by Alan Dulles back in the late 1940s. So there really are evil and wicked people there. And, of course, these spiritually dark elements permeate every aspect of our society, and they work through multitudes of organizations. But you pick up the story there, Don, till we got about 2 minutes before we have to go to our hour break.
Well, these people who engineered or had the power to put scientists to work engineering the cofactors that present as AIDS in one group of people and as chronic fatigue in another group, and in vastly different ways. For example, the mycoplasma is involved in Parkinson's disease, just as it's involved in diabetes type 1. The same process is at work and the same disease agent is at work in both of those diseases. But they were not only involved in sponsoring those disease agents, they were responsible for the decision to murder the President of the United States, because one of the things he said he was going to do was take the CIA and break it into 1,000 pieces and throw the pieces to the wind. And the American people allow this rogue outfit to carry on in the United States and throughout the world doing its evil. No wonder the people of the world more and more are detesting the American people and the American government, because the American people and the American government have done this to them.
But, of course, the average American is totally unaware of what you're saying. And it is simply a small component within that government that is totally evil. And when you understand that, we have to separate the American people from this rogue element within the government that has a different agenda, because, of course, they worship a different god.
Well, you can say separate them, but really, when you come right down to it, AIDS persists in the world. Chronic fatigue persists in the world. Diabetes is increasing exponentially.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back and bring our stations right on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Don is just saying that, you know, diabetes is spreading, and Parkinson's disease is spreading, and chronic fatigue is increasing, and AIDS is spreading throughout the world. And all of these diseases, or at least the component that creates and aggravates these, is actually, much of this is done as part of these bizarre programs carried out by the Special Virus Cancer Project. And you're going to have a hard time finding much on that, although certainly we have many of the books put out by the government that they tried to destroy. They wanted to shred them all, and they weren't all shredded, and Don has many of them. I've gotten them from him. So before we go on, though, Don, I want you to get your telephone number and your website out, or contact information, so people can get your information.
Well, the telephone number is area code 705. And the number is 670-0180. We have now an email address, which I don't know. We just got it last week. We have resisted email for a number of years because we had it briefly a few years ago, and we got overwhelmed by people sending us all kinds of communications about creatures from outer space bringing AIDS down to the earth and all of this.
Don, we're going to have to take a break here. We're going to our break. But you just hang on, and we'll be back to you in just a few minutes. Now, for our listeners out there, you have any question that John Kennedy was murdered by people in our own government? I've actually personally interviewed three assassins. They were hired by our government to kill people. One of them is Chip Tatum. His job was to kill Ross Perot. You remember when Ross Perot dropped out of the race in 1992 because he said they were trying to kill him and his family? Well, this is the guy who was supposed to kill him, but he wouldn't do it. So, of course, he's a fugitive now, fearing for his life. And then, of course, a gentleman who actually was a good friend of L.D. Brown, good friend of Clinton. Clinton got him actually into the CIA, and he was to be an assassin. And then, of course, our good friend Colonel Marvin, who was told when he was at assassins training school that the CIA had killed Kennedy. If you really want to know about the murder of John Kennedy, we have a four-tape setback. We have two of them. One, of course, you'll hear the doctor who was at Parkland Hospital, Dr. Crenshaw, telling about how when President Kennedy came in, what the wounds were. The bullets came in from the front, not from the back, not from the Texas book dispensary. He was threatened and told, if he ever told what he saw that day at Parkland Hospital, he would never practice medicine. He was a surgical resident. He kept quiet for 25 years. He published a book. He was immediately attacked by the AMA, or Journal of the American Medical Association. He sued them, and they gave him almost $250,000, saying, "We know we could win the suit, but of course, we don't want to take it. It'd be too expensive to defend ourselves. We'll just pay him $250,000. That's Dr. Crenshaw's interview. Colonel Fletcher Prouty. Certainly Lee Harvey Oswald is in that first tape set. We have a second tape set with Lyndon Johnson's mistress as she tells about what Lyndon told her about the assassination. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, you'll certainly want to get Dr. Len Horowitz's book, Emerging Viruses. You need to understand the background of what's going on today. And then, of course, understand we're in a battle against organized evil. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. Pray for America. Pray for revival, because if this country doesn't turn back to God, God will never again bless America. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Don Scott, and we're talking about the murder of John Kennedy. We're talking about the AIDS virus. We're talking about the chronic fatigue syndrome. Both of these came out exactly at the same time. Chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia together infect about 2 million Americans. A million Americans have AIDS and will die. Half a million Americans have already died. In Africa, probably 20 to 30 million people have died. And it's estimated that 8,000 people a day die of AIDS. Totally unnecessary. We could have stopped the disease a long time ago, and nothing is being done to stop it. And, of course, they're always trying to come up and confuse you and think, oh, it came from the chimpanzees. Oh, yes, it came from the chimpanzees. We've now found where the epidemic came from. Why? Because they do not want you to know that up until now, why the only chimpanzees that had this were in the laboratories. It was found in laboratory animals. And of course, some of those were actually taken and turned loose in the wilds, but it was primarily a disease of laboratory animals. Well, if AIDS was a disease of laboratory animals, or at least HIV infection was, how did it get into those laboratory animals? And that is the question that nobody wants to ask. The significant thing is that the CIA started in 1953, these experiments to create all these terrible new diseases. And Don has some wonderful material. We've actually tracked the material down. One of them, I think, is Alan Dulles, Gentleman Something or Other. Alan Dulles being the man who created the CIA. And it talks about how, in 1953, they began hiring scientists, the world's leading biologists, to learn how to create terrible new diseases. We know they were working on this long before. Zygmunt Brzezinski wrote about that in his book, Between Two Ages, before Dr. Donald MacArthur testified it before the House Appropriations Committee in 1969. In fact, we have an interview with Dr. Dunnigan, who in 2 months earlier, I believe it was in May of 1969, heard a Dr. Richard Day, who was the director of research, director of medicine, medical director of Planned Parenthood, talking about how the plan was to create new diseases to kill off millions of people. And if you've never heard our 4-tape set called The New Order of the Barbarians, let me suggest you listen to it. And we have a transcript of this incredible story. And, of course, this is all coming out together because we do know that in 1974, why we have Henry Kissinger releasing the National Security Study Memorandum 200, where the major thrust of American foreign policy was to control the populations throughout the world. How do you control the populations? Well, of course, you can prevent death or you can kill off the people. I believe they wanted to do both. So, with that as a background, Don, please pick up the story.
Yes, well, our research, the Common Cause Medical Research Foundation, has gathered documents from many, many sources, with documents which by themselves are recognized as scientific journals worthy of scientific review and study, with conclusions which are reproducible and provable. Journals such as the Journal of the American Medical Association and the New England Journal of Medicine and the Canadian Medical Association Journal and so on. We have gathered documents from all of these sources, as well as from sources of the United States government itself, which, when taken piece by piece and looked at not as individual items, but as parts of a continuum, the evidence that is there clearly for all to see demonstrates that covert evil forces in the United States government and working behind the scenes of that government, the government in many cases being merely the public persona of government, but the power is behind that group of public persona people.
Hold that line there just for a moment as we go to the break. All right, Don, go ahead and pick up there.
These documents demonstrate conclusively that AIDS and chronic fatigue syndrome were made in the laboratories of the United States of America, and that the United States of America is undoubtedly, to the objective, non-involved, onlooker, viewer, or student, the most evil nation in the world today.
But hasn't Canada worked right along with them?
Yes, Canada worked right along with them in many instances, and we know of some of the people who worked with them. For example, we have a university here in Canada called Queen's University. It is in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. And back in the late 40s and early 50s, the United States military asked the Canadian military, who asked Queen's University, and we have all the documentation on this, all the documentation, if we would cooperate in developing these diseases, the one which is lethal, AIDS, and the one which is disabling, chronic fatigue, plus peripheral diseases such as diabetes type 1 and Parkinson's, which are really the same disease in different parts of the body. We have all this evidence, all the documentation, which shows that the United States powers approached the Canadian powers and said, look, we need this disease agent to be tested on people somewhere, and one way we want to test it is to see whether mosquito bites can carry the disease pathogen. And would you help us in this? And the Canadian powers that be said, yes, we will. What do you want us to do? And the Canadians were asked to establish a branch of the epidemiological group in the government called the Dominion Parasite Laboratory in Belleville, Ontario, Canada. And in the Dominion Parasite Laboratory, Canada was to breed 100 million mosquitoes a month. They were to establish a farm which would farm mosquitoes. And the Canadian government said, yes, we will do that for you. So in Belleville, Ontario, Canada, they established the Dominion Parasite Laboratory and began breeding 100 million mosquitoes a month. Then every month they transferred these 100 million mosquitoes to Queen's University.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Don Scott is talking about the Canadian involvement in this, and one of their jobs was to breed mosquitoes so that they could be used to see if they could transmit these terrible new diseases by mosquito bite, and so that Canada then was breeding 100 million mosquitoes a month. And then, of course, where did they transfer them to, Don?
They transferred them to Queen's University, which has a biology department that was under the direction of the biology director, Dr. Reed. And Dr. Reed contaminated the mosquitoes with various disease organisms, including, the evidence is, the mycoplasma. And when they had all these millions of mosquitoes infected with the mycoplasma, they turned them back over to the Canadian military, who in turn divided them up and sent some to the United States military and kept some for the Canadian military. So you had millions and millions and millions of disease-carrying mosquitoes in the hands of the military of Canada and the military of the United States.
Were they ever released, we know?
Oh, absolutely. They were released in a variety of ways. They released some from the air in various ways, and they released some from, for example, trucks. They had specially built trucks with sides that lifted up, and they would go to a community in the middle of the night, and again, there's all kinds of documentation for this. They would go to a small community in the middle of the night, such as Punta Gorda in Florida. They would go into the middle of the village, and they would open the sides of this big truck, and they would turn on gentle fans which would waft the infected mosquitoes out into the community. And that would all happen within about 10 or 15 minutes. The truck would be empty of hundreds of millions of disease-carrying Mosquitoes.
Is that why, of course, the Punta Gorda had such a high incidence of AIDS there?
Yes, and when we started studying Punta Gorda, one of the things that came up in one of the documents we have, and this is actual literal fact, was that the morning early on in the disease epidemic that swept Punta Gorda at this time, a number of people coming out in the morning remarked upon the millions of mosquitoes that were round about. So there were so many of them that a couple of people on record phoned the U.S. Government Meteorological Society, and they said, look, can you tell us what the heck's going on? We're inundated with mosquitoes. And somebody at that meteorological branch of the government seemed to have been prepared with an answer, because what did they say? They didn't say, we don't know why. They said, oh, yes, yes. Well, there is a huge fire in the Everglades 40 miles away, and the mosquitoes have fled from that fire, and they have come to Porto Grande or whatever it is, and that is why you have so many, or Punta Gorda, that is why you have so many mosquitoes.
And that was really early on in the epidemic. You know, this is one of the things they pointed out, with a very, very high incidence of AIDS in that community. And the question was raised, you know, whether it was related to mosquitoes, because it was a poor community and a lot of people sat around outside at nighttime. And I never heard that they'd actually released the mosquitoes there, but of course nothing would surprise me. These are totally evil and depraved people, and when
yes,
you understand
now,
that...
it was not AIDS that swept Punta Gorda in the weeks that followed. It was chronic fatigue syndrome.
Okay, fine.
There was the first real epidemic of chronic fatigue syndrome hit the community of Punta Gorda, Florida, after this influx of mosquitoes. And you can check with any scientists about mosquito behavior, they won't fly from one side of a burning building to the other side. They are totally almost oblivious to their environment, except that environment which is within a foot or two of them. They won't fly 40 miles to get away from a forest fire. This is pure baloney, and it's given out for the benefit of people who ask questions and are satisfied with stupid answers.
No, of course. So then, what was the incidence of chronic fatigue disease in Punta Gorda?
There was a very significant 6 to 10% of the people who sought medical attention at doctors' offices and clinics who were later diagnosed as having chronic fatigue syndrome, and the only place they could all have gotten this was from these infected mosquitoes. Now, the U.S. government went through the motions. They said, oh, we will send a scientist down to see why so many people have chronic fatigue syndrome. So who did they send down? They sent down Dr. Donald Henderson, who's now with the Johns Hopkins University of Medicine. And Dr. Henderson went through the motions of getting people going from door to door, asking, are there any people in the home here who, between this period and that, developed fevers of unknown origin and suffer now from extreme fatigue unrelieved by rest? And they gathered all this data on Punta Gorda. Where did Donald Henderson turn up next? Well, he turned up various places, but in significance to our account. Where did he turn up next? He turned up next working for the World Health Organization, supervising the smallpox vaccination of people throughout Africa. He had 17 teams of people from Atlanta, Georgia's Centers for Disease Control. And these 17 teams of people went in the early 1960s, right through into the 1970s, went over to Africa armed with all kinds of syringes and all kinds of bottles of vaccine, and with the help of the military of Belgium and the military of Portugal and of France and of Britain, they rounded up black people by the score, and they stuck these needles in their arm, and they gave them a vaccination against smallpox. Fine. They got rid of smallpox. But within 5 years' time, this lentivirus, this slow-moving HIV derived from sheep Vizsla virus, was able to work on those people whose immune system was depressed by the mycoplasma, and 60% of them began presenting with AIDS. They worked to plant these cofactors in the people of Africa because the people of Africa were black, were expendable, and they lived on a continent which had vast resources that were underdeveloped and that were coveted by the Western nations, especially by the criminals such as the Rockefeller apparat and their spokesman of the time, Dr. Henry Kissinger. Now, John Hopkins University, oh, such a distinguished, august institution, and they publish a book today available to the people of the United States. You can go to most bookstores, and if you have $35 or $40 or $50, whatever it is, you can buy the John Hopkins Medical Book. And this John Hopkins Medical Book, it has on the front of it, America's number one health authority. Well, take a copy of that book in the bookstore and look in the index and look in the glossary, but don't buy the book. Because in the index and in the glossary, you will find no mention of mycoplasma. No mention. In the world's number one health authority book, they claim, John Hopkins University Medical School, and all of their editors, they have enough editors to man a small battleship, they have not found place in that 1,800-page John Hopkins book to put anything about the mycoplasma. They have nothing in there about undulant fever. They have nothing there about chronic brucellosis, which is the background to chronic fatigue syndrome. And why don't they have it? Because John Hopkins and other American universities were involved with the government in the development of these agents, just like Queen's University here in Canada. Evil powers at the top of these organizations, they put on their purple robes with trimmed with ermine fur, and they gather once a year and they confer degrees upon students, and they tell them you're now an educated person. But they have failed to tell them the truth about so many of these things that make our lives or the lives of so many innocent people tragic.
For our listener out there who's skeptical and said this really couldn't be true, if it was true, somebody would come forward and tell us about it. We carry a book by Dr. Garth Nicholson, who I know is a very, very close to Don Scott. Dr. Nicholson, one of the world's leading biologists, professor at held several professorships at the MD Anderson Clinic, and he tells, of course, about his experience, how as he began looking into this. They tried repeatedly to kill him. They killed several of his students. They killed his immediate superior. He was assassinated. And, of course, he tells about actually talking to people who had worked in these programs creating these new diseases. The book is called Project Daylily. We carry that through Radio Liberty, Project Daylily. There's a book by a man named Gary Glum called Full Disclosure, and a gentleman who was dying of pancreatic carcinoma came to him and said, I was part of the group that put together these new diseases, and he told him the whole story. A book is still available. We don't carry it, but I was in contact today with a man who does carry it, and it is still available. There are not very many copies left, but Full Disclosure by Dr. Gary Glum, fascinating insight, where you'll actually see the story told by one of the men who actually helped the government, the intelligence agencies, developed these terrible, terrible diseases, and the only reason he told he was dying. And of course, Dr. Nicholson was forced to leave his position at the MB Anderson Clinic in Texas, because they tried to kill both he and his wife. The book Project Daylily, fascinating information. Could this already be true? Well, I've interviewed many of the people Dr. Nicholson talks about, so I'm telling you it is true. I have no question at all. There really is organized evil in the world, and men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Don, go ahead, pick up the story.
Well, we've established that back in the late 1940s and early 1950s, American scientists began working on two biological weapons, one which would disable chronic fatigue syndrome, and one which would kill acquired immune deficiency virus, so-called. And the government of the United States, aided by certain allies to varying degrees, including the government of Canada, went to work to develop these agents. And in 1969, Dr. McDonald told members of the House of Representatives, hey, boys, we're on the point now where we can take this disabling disease and we can take this fatal disease and we can put them to work to the benefit of the United States government. And what would that benefit be? Well, that benefit would be you reduce the population of these countries and you reduce the population of the United States and the Western Allied nations very subtly by simply infecting millions of women with a disease which not only debilitates them extremely, such as chronic fatigue, but which really also affects their ability to breed children. Because the Brucella bacteria, from which the mycoplasma is developed, in its full name, it is known as Brucella abortus, A-B-O-R-T-U-S. And what does that mean? That means that living organisms that reproduce will abort their fetuses or their progeny prematurely so that they don't have healthy babies. They deliver dead or dying fetuses.
And that's what happened. They get into the cows, and then of course the cows would have abortions. They wouldn't have calves.
Yes. So they were able to disable millions of whites, and they were able to kill millions of blacks, and they're still killing millions of blacks, and they're still disabling millions of whites, and the disease agent is essentially this mycoplasma, which puts down the immune system and opens the door for various other disease agents, including HIV, which, as I say, is essentially the retrovirus of sheep. And there was never a retrovirus in the history of mankind and here and medicine, never a retrovirus that affected human beings in any way until this new retrovirus hit mankind in 1981 in the form of HIV. But when they started using it, actually they didn't understand totally what it was they had. They knew they had something terrible, but they were willing to use it anyway because it's so plain evil, and they had to continue their studies, and they were looking at the people who developed these diseases from these cofactors, and they were studying their blood and trying to find out now just what are these disease agents doing that causes this. And Dr. Luc Montagnier of Paris, France, the Pasteur Institute, he got some blood from a patient in a Lisbon hospital, a Portuguese hospital, and he was studying it, and then he suddenly realized that there was an organism there that shouldn't be in the blood.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Don Scott. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Don was saying that Luc Montagnier had gotten some blood from Luc Montagnier was at the Pasteur Institute there in Paris, but he had gotten some blood from a Portuguese individual who was ill, and he found that there was an organism in that shouldn't be there. Pick up the story there, please.
Yes. Well, he found this organism in the blood of this guy sick with AIDS, but they didn't call it AIDS at the time, and he was struck by something. The organism, whatever it was, he associated it with lymphadenopathy. And he called it lymphadenopathy-associated virus. Now, let me be simplistic here, because in this simplicity is the truth. He called it the lymphadenopathy-associated virus because it was a virus particle that he associated with lymphadenopathy. Now, what is lymphadenopathy? Well, lymphadenopathy is a disease of humans and of other organisms where the immune system is destroyed. The lymph glands, which are essentially the areas where the disease agents filtered out of the blood, are processed to be broken up and recirculated as healthy particles for new organisms. And this is lymphadenopathy.
Well, because the lymphadenopathy is really where the lymph nodes swell, and you've got the swollen lymph nodes all over the body, and of course they're responding to this disease of the CD4 helper cells, a specific type of lymphocyte. So pick up the story there.
They're being overworked, and therefore they swell.
Right.
So he called it the lymphadenopathy-associated virus, and he said, aha, this lymphadenopathy-associated virus is the foreign particle in the blood that shouldn't be there in these AIDS victims, so this must be associated with the AIDS that they are presenting with. And he made a big mistake. He sent a sample of it to Robert Gallo of the United States of America, and Robert Gallo went through a series of motions, and came up and suddenly released a press release to the world. Hey, folks of the world, we have discovered the cause of AIDS.
Now, of course, it was really the virus that Luc Montagnier discovered.
Yes, and instead of Gallo calling a lymphadenopathy-associated virus, he came up with a new name. He called it the human T-cell leukemia virus and species number 3. And he began touting this as the cause of AIDS, and he began publishing all the details about it, and Robert Gallo, great American scientist, honored throughout the world, has discovered the cause of AIDS, and now knowing the cause of AIDS, we can address it, and we can stop AIDS. What a line of baloney.
Well, of course, it was really very important that Gallo could say it was his virus, because then he could develop a blood test for it, the so-called ELISA test, and other laboratory tests that were going to make a lot of money.
Actually,
of course, it was Luc Montagnier that found the virus, and eventually Gallo said, oh, gee, we just must have made a mistake in our laboratory. We got our specimens all mixed up. Yes, it was Luc Montagnier's virus. Yes, I didn't steal it. It was just, it's sort of like why we got into Iraq, you know. It was just a lot of mistaken information coming to me. It must have been my lab technician's fault. He must have lied to me about it. So, anyway, go ahead, pick up this story there.
Yes, but anyway, Luc Montagnier, working essentially for the French government, sued Robert Gallo and the United States government. And because Gallo was then in a position to make millions, in fact billions and billions of dollars, because they spent the first few years developing a disease agent, and they spent the next years developing a so-called identification way for it, and they could make billions and billions of dollars off sick people. So the French government sued the American government, and the United States government got Montagnier and Gallo together in this, by themselves with a few advisors and aides and government lawyers, and they told them something, and whatever they told them we don't know for sure, but after a couple of weeks the two came out of the meeting and said, hey, we were both right. Luc discovered LAV, that's true, and he did send a sample to Robert Gallo. Robert Gallo, coincidentally and over the same period of time, had discovered the same thing, and he didn't just steal it from Luc Montagnier, and therefore we're going to call this organism not the lymphadenopathy-associated virus that Luc had called it, and not the HTLV-3 that Gallo had called it. We're going to call it Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome. And it's the syndrome which is caused by this particular virus, a human immunodeficiency virus.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. We Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, then very soon, Luc Montagnier came out and said, but there's got to be another cofactor here. It's not just simply the HIV virus. There is a mycoplasma involved. And then, then Gallo came out and said, well, yes, there is something else, but it's a herpes 6 virus, and did everything he could to draw people's attention away from what Luc Montagnier said, and that is the mycoplasma plays an important part in the disease complex. And so what it was a planned program of confusing the American people and the American scientists. I believe Gallo knew exactly what was going on. He knew the mycoplasm was the cofactor. But, of course, with his prestige, why he was able to draw people away. Luc Montagnier was right on. It was not only HIV, but the mycoplasm as well. It was the two of them working together that created this terrible disease. In fact, many people will call a chronic fatigue syndrome HIV negative AIDS, because you have so many of the symptoms associated with that, except you do not have the severe CD4 count suppression, but you have, with the chronic fatigue related directly to the mycoplasma infection, you have a very, very ill person. So pick up the story there.
Yes, now this is why so many people who are in very high positions, When they talk about AIDS, they preface it by saying HIV AIDS. They are doing that to make sure that people's attention is taken away from the real cause and directed to this human immunodeficiency virus, which does not cause AIDS. So they have a whole bunch of money being spent and a whole bunch of people being put to work studying how is it that HIV causes AIDS? How does it actually work in the body? It's a retrovirus. It gets into the cells. It takes over the cell's DNA, and it manufactures more of itself. But how does it actually present as all these disease agents or presentations? And so they have a whole bunch of people happily in an Alice in Wonderland world investigating a non-cause to which they attribute the cause of AIDS. And the cause of AIDS is not HIV. That's only a cofactor which presents certain symptoms in certain ways. The cause is the immune deficiency virus, the mycoplasma, in reality, which is derived from the bacteria. And in the programs that were being used to develop these, the program essentially...
Hold that thought, Tom. We're going to have to just bring our stations right back on board here, right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and somebody had called in and asked, of course, if Lyme disease was part and parcel of what we're talking about. Lyme disease is a separate disease, and yet many of the people with Lyme disease actually have secondary mycoplasma infections. So Lyme disease is related to Borrelia, which is a spirochete. However, these people have an altered immune system, and certainly many of them have mycoplasma infection as well. And there are multiple diseases that are associated with Lyme disease. Where did it come from? Why, it started in a place called Lyme, Connecticut, right across the inlet from a government biological warfare laboratory on a place called Plum Island, where they were doing all of these experiments, and actually they let the diseases that they created there escape over to Lyme, Connecticut. This is what many people believe. That was known as Lab 257. We carried the book on Lab 257 for a long time, but they can't let the American people know that a million people are incapacitated by another one of these self-created diseases. Lyme disease is a new disease. It didn't exist before. Well, Don, before we go on, let's get your telephone number and information out on how people can get in touch with you and get the information that you have available.
Well, could I give our mailing address?
Sure, go right ahead.
Dr. Stan. We do have the telephone number and people can have it, but I surely wish they wouldn't phone me, because let me assure you, there are only two members working full-time for the Common Cause Medical Research Foundation. That is myself at age 82. I'm still working, but I dearly love to retire, but I can't retire as long as 8,000 innocent black people are being murdered every day by the United States of America. And working with me is my son, Bill, who works for Peanuts, let me assure you. But they can reach us by phone if they want to, but we prefer they write to Box 133. That's Box 133, Station B, as in Bob. Station B, Sudbury, and the zip code, Sudbury, Canada, P as in Peter, 3, E as in Edward, 4, N as in Norman, 5. Now, we spend hour after hour, day after day, studying scientific literature. The documents we have are not primarily, we read other books, of course, and we value many of them. For example, Ed Hooper's book, The River, absolutely magnificent study of AIDS. And Hillary Johnson's book, Osler's Web, a magnificent study of chronic fatigue syndrome. We read those secondary sources and gain a great deal from them as well. But the primary source we use are scientific medical documents from the United States government, primarily, and from the peer-reviewed journals of the various research institutes and hospitals. Now, when the United States was developing this whole program, they used a series of programs called, these are secret, covert CIA programs, called MK Ultra, MK Naomi, MK Delta. And initially, when they started out, they had a program called MK Detrick. Now, MK stands for monkey kidney. Monkey kidney. That's where chimpanzees come in, and that's where rhesus monkey comes in. They would capture or breed chimpanzees in Camp Lindy, in Belgium, Congo. They would kill those chimps and take their kidneys, and they would make a mash out of the kidneys, and then on those kidneys they would grow the mycoplasma until they had a sufficient quantity of mycoplasma to infect various vaccines that they were giving supposedly to counter epidemics of polio. Was one of their favorite stories then. And in the United States, in New Orleans, at Tulane University, outside of New Orleans, there's a little town called Covington, Louisiana, and they established a Delta primate farm where they bred rhesus monkeys. And they took these rhesus monkeys and they killed them, and they ground up their kidneys, MK, monkey kidneys, in the Delta primate farm. So they had a program called MK Delta, and they would grow on those monkey kidneys, they would grow the mycoplasma. And when they grew the mycoplasma, they sent them not only to Tulane University and to John Hopkins, they also sent it to Baylor College of Medicine. Now, this is the most corrupt college of medicine in the world, and it's in Texas. And at Baylor, they took this mycoplasma, which was grown on the monkey kidneys, and they went to Huntington, Texas, the prison there, and they got a bunch of prisoners to volunteer, and they tested this mycoplasma-laced derivative from monkey kidneys on prisoners. And they learned an awful lot about the mycoplasma. And the doctors doing that work were Doctors Couch and Chenault. And interestingly enough, these are the same two gentlemen who are now up to their neck in avian flu. And let me assure the listeners to your program, Dr. Stan, avian flu we call AIDS Mark II. Because they are building us up for a new epidemic. The old epidemic of AIDS is doing its job marvelously. They're killing 8,000 people a day. Great. Let it roll on. They are disabling several thousand a day with chronic fatigue syndrome. Now the same people using the same disease organism, but you never hear of it. You never hear of it. The mycoplasma in this avian disease agent, which they call the H5N1 species. There are a whole bunch of other species, and we know of these, and we got the documents about them. But they're all tied together, and they all go back, for example, to the early days when the one person who was building up to call a halt to this research and to put a stop to it, and again the evidence is clear, was a president called John F. Kennedy. Now, John F. Kennedy had a lot of enemies because essentially his enemies were evil. He had the mafia, and he had the CIA, he had the military people, and actually he had Israel as an enemy. This is hard to believe, but the facts are there. Ben-Gurion, president of Israel, was developing an atom bomb, and President Kennedy, we now know from historic documents, said to Israel, stop developing an atom bomb, just as George Bush is saying to Iran, stop developing an atom bomb. But the Israelis ignored the United States and went on with the atom bomb, and President Kennedy said, you have to stop that. President Kennedy also told Ben-Gurion something else, and again, this is part of the historical record. This isn't just me being anti-Israel. This is me being anti the forces that use human beings as expendable production units. President Kennedy said to Israel, you must use some of your great wealth to pay money to those Palestinians whose farms were seized, whose businesses were seized, whose homes were seized, and are now being utilized by Israelis. And Ben-Gurion said, never. We will not pay reparations to displaced Palestinians. Then there was something else, it now turns out. And again, the record is clear. People want to read it. But if you don't want to read history, then listen to Dr. Stan and a few others. The President of the United States, it turns out, was in private, secret correspondence on a very friendly basis with the Egyptian President Nasser. And the indication was that they were going to work together to fence Israel in so that reparations were paid to the displaced Palestinians and the manufacture of the atom bomb was stopped. And that's where the Mossad comes in. And a lot of people, again, don't know this, but a member of the Mossad was Mayor Lansky of the Mafia in the United States. And the Mafia in the United States was being hounded without mercy by Attorney General Robert Kennedy. So Mayor Lansky had two reasons to oppose President Kennedy. And he, therefore, was one of them was because he was actually a member of the Mossad while being a leader of the Mafia in the United States. So President Kennedy had a lot of enemies because President Kennedy was out to put good ahead of evil, and he had to be executed. And that's where our latest research brings us today. We have brought out the latest copy of our Journal of Degenerative Diseases. Now, this journal, in four parts, establishes the links between the people who developed the AIDS cofactors, the mycoplasma, and the sheep retrovirus, and hence producing the disease epidemic of AIDS and the disabling epidemic of chronic fatigue. We bring out clearly the relationship between that work and the decision to murder the President of the United States, John F. Kennedy. And we have gone into both areas extensively. And the next three issues of the journal will carry this development right through to the present day and what is going on with the so-called avian flu and the drum beating is being done by about avian flu by the same people who were developed, who were involved in the development of the AIDS cofactors. And if people want to write to us at Box 133, Station B, Sudbury, Ontario, Canada, P3E4N5, we can tell them how to get a copy of our journal. It's very economic, and they will be able to read this full story. And how will it affect them, aside from them being human beings who are looking on while 8,000 of their fellow human beings are killed in Africa? Well, we demonstrate from, again, from the scientific literature, the links between, for example, cancer and the mycoplasma. The mycoplasma stimulates what is known as a hormone called the growth factor. But unfortunately, the mycoplasma is an incomplete microorganism, and the growth is random. The growth factor in mycoplasma-infected people seek out parts of the human anatomy which are vulnerable, for example, lungs damaged by nicotine, and so on, and they start growing randomly without purpose, but depriving the body of essential ingredients it needs for the parts of the body that are essential. That's cancer. That is tied in with the mycoplasma.
And of course, the thing is, when your immune system is down, why, cancers grow. Lots of people have cancers. But, you know, their immune system takes care of them. They really don't bother them. But you destroy the immune system. And this is one of the things that people with AIDS die of. They die of multiple different types of cancers because they have no immune function or ability to fight that off. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely. And we demonstrate in this four-part series in our Journal of Degenerative Diseases, we demonstrate the link between the mycoplasma and cancer, for example. Now, just last Monday, a week ago today, I was invited to Woodstock, Ontario, Canada, by the Rotary Club. Now, they're a very fine group of people. They do good things. They are nice people. They meet weekly, and they have get-togethers, pleasant get-togethers, and they do good work. They sponsor children's hospitals and everything else. And they invited me to come down to Woodstock to speak to them. And I went down there, and after a nice dinner at the hotel in Woodstock, Ontario, they introduced me as a researcher, and I stood up with my flip charts. We can't afford all this fancy computer control devices. We had this flip chart, and the title on the first page was "To Tell the Truth," and the next page said "AIDS Made in America." And we demonstrated, or I demonstrated, the whole story right from when the mycoplasma was first recognized in modern American medicine in cadets of the United States Navy. We won't go into all that background story. And I went right through the whole thing with them. And then I pointed out that, for example, the mycoplasma is patented by the United States government, just as if they had patented a new type of gun. Only it's not a gun that you point at somebody and fire a chunk of lead through their head. It's a gun which is carried by a mosquito and carries a disease agent into their blood, which gives them chronic fatigue syndrome. Now, you mentioned Lyme disease. Lyme disease is also a mycoplasmal illness. We have the latest scientific documents which demonstrate that the major factor in Lyme disease is a species of mycoplasma called Mycoplasma bartonella. They thought the bartonella was a bacterium, but they learned that it is that a particle of Bartonella nucleic acid is a mycoplasma. So it causes a type of AIDS, only don't look at the methods of communication and all that, which throws a lot of people off AIDS. Look at the fact that a particle of a bacterial genome is doing the same kind of damage in victims of Lyme as is done to victims of chronic fatigue. But Dr. Shai Ching Lo, leading research pathologist for the United States government. Now let me emphasize that. United States government. Your source of evil is the United States government in the form of these researchers who are doing these things. Dr. Shai Ching Lo has patented the pathogenic mycoplasma, which he associates with AIDS, but he's also, with other colleagues, written a very important article about the links between mycoplasma and cancer. Now, at that Rotary Club meeting, there were three medical doctors. Two of them were absolutely shocked down to the soles of their feet. They couldn't think of a thing to say in response. They had never seen the patent.
Hold that. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, Don, what happened now? You had two doctors, of course, had never seen this. They didn't know about the patent. They have never heard most of the things we've been talking about tonight. So go on from there.
They were shocked down to the soles of their shoes. And but the third doctor came up to me afterwards, and he said, "My goodness, I have never heard of the mycoplasma." And he said, "I have a daughter-in-law of whom I am very fond, and she has multiple sclerosis. Is there a link?" And I said, "Absolutely. We have research documents to demonstrate this." And he said, "I have a granddaughter who has diabetes type 1. Is there a link?" And I said, "Absolutely." What happens? The mycoplasma is an organism which is only a particle of a complete organism. And as an organism which only is a part of a complete organism, it cannot process its own growth requirements. So it has to steal those growth requirements from some other cell. Now, what is the growth requirement it needs? The growth requirements is cholesterol. And all of these stupid drugs people take for cholesterol control, what a line that is.
And of course, not only that, it decreases their fertility as well. It affects their mind.
It's absolutely terrible. But anyway, they're pushing this stuff in these big television ads. But the mycoplasma pulls the cholesterol out of the cell wall, and every fifth particle of the cell wall is a particle of cholesterol. And when enough of it is pulled out, the cell dies. Now, what if the mycoplasma goes into the beta cells in the pancreas and pulls the cholesterol out of the cell wall, and the beta cells in the pancreas die? What disease do you get?
Diabetes, of course.
Diabetes. Because it stops producing insulin. Now, if that same disease organism goes into the cells of the substantia nigra up at the top of the brain stem and pulls the cholesterol out of the cell wall, the cell stops producing dopamine. And what disease do you get there? You get Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease is diabetes in a different place in the body, doing a different kind of damage. But it's both the same organism pulling cholesterol out of the cell wall and killing it.
And that's, of course, why we're seeing so much more Parkinson's disease today than we ever have before.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and, Don, we're out of time. And could you get your address out one more time?
Yes. Common Cause Medical Research Foundation. Just use the initials.
Hold that thought. We'll get it as soon as we get back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you'd like to get, of course, the tape of the entire program, because we do talk during the breaks, why, they're available from Radio Liberty at calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we have other interviews with Don Scott on chronic fatigue syndrome. But, Don, would you get your address out? I know people across America would like to hear it. What is that address one more time?
CCMRF, Common Cause Medical Research Foundation, CCMRF, Box 133. Station B, as in Bob, Sudbury, SUDBURY, Canada, P3 N5. And write to us, and we will tell you how to get our journal, the latest four issues of which demonstrate conclusively that the people who brought us AIDS participated in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, and many of those same people, but of course many of them replaced by younger people, are now developing the avian flu H5N1 species. They already have the disease agent. They already know how to make it leap from birds to men. But they're letting on to us that they're doing all this great research to save mankind, and they're just prepping mankind so that mankind doesn't realize how they've been taken.
All right, well, we're out of time, Don. We have to get you on again sometime real soon. Will you come back again?
I'm always delighted to talk with you, Dr. Stan. Thank you for the invitation.
God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us. Well, our guest this evening has been Don Scott, and I hope you've really enjoyed it. There's so much to cover here. But most people, and even most doctors, don't know the relationship between the HIV and the mycoplasm and creating the syndrome we call AIDS, the acquired immune deficiency disease. Let me suggest several books. One of them, would, of course, would be Emerging Viruses by Dr. Len Horowitz. Another would be Project Daylily, which is a faction. It's fact, but it's written as fiction by Dr. Garth Nicholson, who, of course, his life has been threatened many times. One of the world's leading biologists, believe me, I've checked him with other biologists, revered by his students, certainly editor of two magazines, scientific journals, and on the scientific board of 10 others. He's given up a lot of that now because, of course, he's had to cut back on his visibility for fear of his life. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not talking to something imaginary. We're talking about something real. Project Daylily, the book certainly entitled The Emerging Viruses. Certainly you want to get our little pamphlet on genetic diseases, genetic alteration. I believe there's the title of it. It's a little pamphlet. And you certainly give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. The pamphlet is called Genetic Engineering. It's five of my newsletters. You've got to read them. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day, directly or indirectly on the Internet. You can hear our programs on shortwave 5 hours, 4 hours a day. You can hear our Telstar 5 satellite programs 9 hours a day. Pray for America. Please pray.